Okay, campers, rise and shine, and don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there today.
Yes, it is.
That's right, it's February 2nd, which can mean only one thing.
It's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. That sounded like I had two lungs then.
It did, yeah. Well done, bud. Well done.
Getting in it.
Into it.
How are you doing today, buddy?
Good. I've had some time off. I feel a bit more like a human.
Good. You look more human. You're looking good.
I'm feeling better. I'm tired, but that's just because my sleep pattern's all...
all fucking. Yeah, you've had time off.
Had time off. How about you?
Morphine Ben has been like on a fucking VHS and DVD buying spree.
Yep.
He decided it was a good thing to do from the hours of 2 a.m. until 6 a.m. to go on eBay.
Whilst asleep. Basically.
Whilst normal Ben should have been asleep, Morphine Ben was out shopping. So this week, I think I have between 60 and 70 VHS showing up and about 125 DVDs.
But you got the space for them. It's good.
No, I don't.
You got a hallway?
I don't even have that. Because there's three bags of DVDs and a bookshelf full of VHS in my one hallway at the moment that I need to move. All in all, I'm doing pretty good.
Nice.
Listen, I've written the breakdown today, but before we get into the breakdown, I want to do a quick what we're getting into.
Okay.
So what are we getting into today, Rob?
Well, we're going to get into how Groundhog Day came to be.
We're going to get into how fucking good are time loop movies.
Pretty fucking good. They are pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
How long is Phil in this time loop in Groundhog Day?
Is Groundhog Day a religious movie?
I would say...
maybe.
It can be. Of all the films ever made,
yeah,
it's one of the films of all time.
It is one of the films of all time.
And finally, what does it really mean?
What's it really mean? As I said, I've written the breakdown. I've already had a bit of an emotional breakdown.
I feel like
I've got that out of the way, so that's good. So before I have another, why don't we get into the breakdown of the movie? This is a quick refresher for anyone that's seen it that hasn't seen it for a while. If you've not seen it and not planning on it, listen to this. If you are planning on watching it, pause the fucking episode and go and watch it right now.
Yeah.
It's a huge spoiler. It's also been out for like 100 years. Grow up.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
So act one, Phil versus Phil forever.
Yeah.
Phil Connors, a smarmy TV weatherman with the charm of a damp sock, begrudgingly heads over to Punxsutawney to cover a rodent's big day. Oozes contempt for everyone within a 5-mile radius, including the perpetually cheerful Rita, who somehow hasn't smothered him yet. I had to lean over and reach the keyboard, and I only read that word.
No, it was great.
So I had to make it as long as possible.
I thought you were going
to
go for like a hoo-wee.
No, sadly not.
That blew me away.
He oozes contempt for everyone within a 5-mile radius, including the perpetually cheerful Rita, somehow hasn't smothered him to death yet.
Don't edit the first one out. Keep them all in.
After delivering the forecast like a man reading his own obituary, Phil wakes up to find that time itself has decided he's the perfect candidate for a cosmic prank.
Yeah.
He's stuck reliving the same day repeatedly with a groundhog.
Yeah.
Because eternity apparently has a sense of humor.
Yeah, it does. Act two, The Immortal Arsehole.
Oh, what a t-shirt.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Phil reacts as any rational person would. He spirals into a cocktail of despair, hedonism, and questionable decision-making. With zero consequences, he binges, seduces, steals, and crashes cars like a nihilistic Caitlyn Jenner. That's why I asked you her name earlier. He even experiments with death, only to discover that suicide in Punxsutawney. I've never said that out loud.
It's said often. I was like, surely he knows this
one. But I've never said it.
Right.
It's okay. Like, you know, can't remember the word that you fucked up because you didn't even read it.
Oh, I regularly fuck them up.
Yeah, there's a few. I need to start writing them down.
Behemoth.
Just so I can throw this in your face when you bring up my...
Behemoth.
Yeah, something like that.
I said behemoth rather than behemoth.
All right, just edit that bit out and then I'll do you on this when you're ready.
Great, yeah.
But it's like you with behemoth.
Yeah, there we
remember
go.
That
yeah,
one?
I remember that.
Fucking nailed
God,
you.
Way back when. I'd forgotten all about that.
And it
yeah,
nailed nice. You fucking idiot. Suicide in Punxsutawney is less than an exit strategy and more of a reset button. Slowly, beneath the layers of sarcasm and self-loathing, a sliver of humanity begins to thaw. It's probably just frostbite, though, because he's been outside for a long time now.
He has been outside a lot.
And it's winter.
Yeah,
it's cold out there. He didn't bring his booties.
Act three, enlightenment or whatever. After countless lifetimes of failure, I know the feeling, Phil finally learns the radical act of not being a massive arsehole to everyone around him at any given chance.
Yeah.
I've not learned that one yet.
I was going to say.
He plays piano, saves lives, carves ice sculptures, and manages to be genuinely nice without vomiting from the effort. The universe, evidently satisfied that he's now a functioning human being, releases him from the loop. He wakes up on February 3rd next to Rita, proof that personal growth and mild emotional competence can occasionally be rewarded. Somewhere, the groundhog nods sagely, its cosmic work complete.
And that's Groundhog Day.
That's Groundhog Day.
That's Groundhog Day in a nutshell.
If you've seen it before, you'll remember all of this. Yeah. If you hadn't seen it before, not much point now.
If you haven't seen it before, just watch it again.
Yeah.
And again. And again.
And again.
And again.
Every day, once a day.
Because why not? That's funny. Commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit.
I feel like no one's committing to the bit these days.
I think there is probably a human out there who watches Groundhog Day once a day. And that's their whole thing.
If that is you and you're listening to this episode on Groundhog Day, get in touch with us. Everymovieeveruk@gmail.com and just let us know. It's a Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
The film that we got is different to the film that was written.
Okay.
The original screenplay was written by Danny Rubin. It then sold. Harold Ramis came on as director. Rewrites and tweaks by Harold Ramis and Bill Murray. They sort of obviously came on board part and parcel.
Is this pre or post Ghostbusters?
So Ghostbusters is 1984.
Oh, no, this is 93.
Yeah, this is, I was going to say, early 90s.
I'm a full 9 years too early.
Post, then.
This is very post.
Post Ghostbusters.
This is post Ghostbusters. Okay. Post Ghost, post Busters.
Yeah, post Busters.
Post Busters sounds more like a courier service.
Yeah.
Or the bombing wing of the IRA in the 80s. Who are you going to call? Margaret Thatcher.
Dublin is a large area where we get a listener.
Yeah, you know,
it's a large. We've got a large population of
and
Irish
they
loved listeners.
That.
I'm sure they did. Belfast especially. Look,
no one's going to be upset about the concept of Margaret Thatcher getting bombed.
That concept, everyone's for that. You've just solved an issue.
Yeah.
The English and the Irish have never been closer. Post-Busters, never been further apart. Never been further apart.
I'd love to hear it on a tin whistle.
The original screenplay.
I'm afraid of my posts.
The fact that that was an elderly voice makes it 10 times worse. Makes it 10 times worse. Fucking hell. Groundhog Day. The original script. Different to the movie that we got.
Right,
it's in essence what I'm trying to say.
It was rewritten by Harold Ramis, who plays Egon in Ghostbusters.
Yes, and the Doctor in Groundhog Day.
Lovely.
Rubin's script came from two ideas. He was thinking a lot about immortality and if a person could live more than one lifetime, would they eventually be able to change their ways? Like, could a bad person become a good person?
Mm.
Could a selfish man become a generous man? So he combined these ideas with an earlier pitch that he'd written under the working title, The Time Machine, in which a person accidentally gets stuck living the same day over and over again whilst trying to invent a time machine.
Oh, nice.
So that was like how this movie came to be.
Mm.
And that as a setup, you think, oh, this is like a normal early 90s, late 80s, movie, right? Comedy, romance, that kind of thing. Except for this falls into a certain category of movie, which I happen to fucking love.
Right.
And this is a time loop movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the well?
Okay. I was watching this film and you said, look, give it a watch.
Yeah.
Let me know what you think's going on.
Yeah.
And I had a theory. It was a perfect theory.
Okay.
Until there's one very large bit of evidence that breaks it.
Well, give me the theory.
My theory is that it's not a time loop.
Okay.
Everyone just has amnesia.
Oh.
Because everyone in the area wakes up and forgets yesterday.
Rita's like, I've got really bad deja vu. Have you said this before? Okay, that kind of works.
And I was kind of thinking, what if it is February the 3rd, but everyone in this localized area is experiencing localized amnesia?
Yeah.
And that's why all the clocks are stopped. No one's got access to a calendar. They're just like, they're all living February the 2nd, but time continues normally.
Right, okay.
But then there's a guy that dies and comes back to life. And I figured he's not going to come back to life just because he forgot that he died.
There's two guys that do that because I feel like Phil, played by Bill Murray, who kills himself.
He kills himself. Yeah. He doesn't then just go, "Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, I forgot about the toaster in the bathtub."
You know, you never forget a toaster in the bathtub. What a night!
Best bath bomb. You know what I mean? Best one you'll ever get.
Bath busters.
Shocking. Get it? Because electric.
Yeah. So it is a time loop movie, and you're right, it is a good genre.
It's a fucking great genre. So there's two reasons why I love time loop movies. Well, two reasons mainly, but the main two things that draw me to these types of movies is the first is the thought exercise of every time the time loop resets, the day that has just been lived creates a timeline that carries on living. It's the titular character that resets and goes back to February 2nd. So when Phil lives out February 2nd the first time, And then he does whatever he does normally and this, that, and the other. And then he wakes up again on February 2nd. There is a timeline running where February the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and life just carries on down that timeline. He resets in the time loop and then he lives a day and he's like, oh shit, I don't know what's going on here. I'm stuck in a time loop. This might be a weird thing. And then he wakes up the next day.
And so each day creates a new timeline. A new
infinite timeline that just keeps going. Exactly. That's a terrifying thought. And it's a terrifying thought that I need to be right, because the thought of the opposite of that is worse. And it's much worse.
No, it's tidy.
No, it's much worse.
It just gets deleted.
No, it doesn't. Because I'm going to come back to this in a moment. Because I need to think, it might just get deleted. That's fine. But I need to think about the implications of that. And I'll dive into it in a moment because it fucks with me on a level that I can't get into fully, because we will be here for hours.
Is this your favourite time loop movie?
It's one of. This is my favourite time loop movie, unironically. And then I have a guilty pleasure time loop movie, which is that Live, Die, Repeat with Tom Cruise Emily Blunt.
That's not a guilty pleasure. That's a guilty pleasure. It's a legitimately good film.
It's fucking amazing. It's a terrible film, but it's fucking amazing.
It's great.
It's an awful film.
I've got my least favourite time loop movie, which is Primer.
What's Primer?
Primer is a little indie movie about two guys who discover time travel.
Right.
But what you have to do is you have to sit in the box for the amount of time that you want to travel back for.
So if you want to travel back 100 years, you sit in a box for 100 years?
Yeah.
But does time stop in the box?
So these are all valid questions, right? And what this film does is, rather than provide much in terms of plot,
right,
it provides a very specific set of time rules.
Right.
And then it's basically a mechanics movie.
Ooh.
The whole movie is about the mechanics of how this time travel works.
That's actually quite interesting.
It's incredibly dry. It's the driest time loop movie
coming
that
from
exists.
You as well. You fucking love dry.
And this was too dry for me. This was like a mouthful of sand.
I'm going to watch it.
Give it a go. Yeah, you might love it.
I might hate it.
You just hate watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll hate watch it just because you had to, so I will. I'll solidarity. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
So the time loop thing, creating infinite timelines, I love that idea, because then that has like a whole different universe of laws that is fun to get into. But then my other favorite thing about time loop movies is trying to figure out how long the time loop lasts.
Okay.
So obviously to everyone else in there, it's just a normal day.
Yeah.
So that's titular character. Are they tracking their time in there? Are they saying, I have been here for fucking years or not? Or have I been here for weeks or...
Yeah. Because like he can't even memento it, can he? Because
this is what I mean.
He can't do tattoos.
No, you can't. Because you'll wake up without it. Because we did this, Bill Murray, his character Phil does a science experiment. He snaps a pencil before he goes to bed and leaves it in two separate places. And then when he wakes up, there is one solid pencil.
So the tattoo would be gone.
It would be, exactly.
He's got nothing. He can't mark a calendar.
There's no nothing. But this is the thing, right? This is where it gets really interesting. On the original script, there is... No, actually, fuck it. This is messing with me too much. The opposite of the infinite timeline theory, right? The opposite of the infinite timeline theory, it's now not about a time loop in a certain place that everyone is stuck in, right?
Right.
It's now the entire universe has ceased to exist only to teach one person a lesson.
Which is pretty narcissistic. That's and kind of fucking, in line with Phil, right?
But it's early Phil. That's the universe sympathizing with early Phil in Groundhog Day. And that doesn't sit right with me, because then that brings up a whole thing of like, Phil does what the universe can't, and then he has to exist in a universe that we know categorically is advertently narcissistic. And I'm like, I don't trust that, because I feel like he's done it as, it's almost like a joke.
I feel it's
point.
A caring thing. I feel like the universe is saying, if I can't take time out of my schedule
for one guy, for one white man,
then there's no
in
point
America,
in me having billions of them.
Who's having a bit of a scruff.
Yeah. Not
being a paid weatherman.
Not dictators.
Sure.
East Asia. Not Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's leave that going.
They can all take over. That's
Trump's fine.
Yeah, all
this is
fine.
Let's not teach him a lesson. Let's not send him three ghosts in the night.
No, definitely
not. But this weatherman's really fucking me off.
Yeah, this weatherman is a bit sad. He's a bit miffed about having to do one report
on
a groundhog.
Okay, that is...
The most nihilistic thing I can think about.
That is terrible.
Do you see what I mean?
Not little Timmy, who could have survived this week.
So what I'm saying is that this film creates infinite timelines because it has to. Otherwise, it is objectively an awful, awful premise for a movie. Yeah, exactly. It's a terrible premise for a movie. So the infinite timeline thing is something that I find quite fun, because in this film, the time loop resets a fair few times after Bill Murray's character, Phil, gets himself into a situation. In various situations, there's one situation where he ends up in jail.
There is,
He gets drunk at a bar with a couple local guys, and he has the whole philosophical chat with them. The not on the nose philosophical, but the kind of underlying subtle philosophy that is riddled throughout
just
this movie.
Stuck in a day, and it's always, and then the two guys in the bar are like, "That's game. About me."
Yeah, imagine living the same day over and over. Nothing special happening. You're going nowhere. Nothing big's coming. Well, that about sums me up. On the second or third watch through, you're literally like, "Ooh, okay, maybe I'll look inward on this one." Ooh. Where's the mirror? Let's hold that up to my face. They end up going to jail.
Yes.
Because when the cops come over, he just puts in an order for fast food.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then drives into a train.
All right. But now imagine that this infinite timeline theory, there's two options that I like to play with on this one. There's one option where it's just Phil's consciousness that is being transferred from Phil at the end of that day, and his consciousness and memories and everything that's happened that day gets transferred to new timeline.
So is Phil in jail now in a vegetative state?
Not in a vegetative state. He knows everything that's gone on.
Right.
But he is no longer in the time loop.
So they've duplicated his soul.
They've duplicated him.
There's now two souls.
But he is not, that timeline Phil's not in the time loop anymore. So he just carries on living as normal. One Phil per timeline.
Yeah.
And then the memory of each timeline is transferred into the new Phil. So the new Phil
is like a bucket where all of them are poured into.
Exactly. But imagine how insane the Phil that they jailed on the 73rd or 74th time loop.
Yep.
They pop him in a cell. They go, right, that's it. Fucking sleep it off in the drunk tank. Mm-hmm. He goes to sleep. Everyone's certain that he is in that cell. They then go back at 6:05 in the morning, unknowingly that Phil, 5 minutes ago, has been transferred to a new timeline.
See, you're beginning to make me worry now because I thought that David Lynch was a visionary genius.
Okay.
But I'm now looking at the dates and Lost Highway, in which that exact thing happens and they put a man in jail. And then at 6 o'clock in the morning, he's a different man.
Yeah.
Was 3 years later.
David Lynch sat down and had a thought experiment after watching Groundhog Day
and went, I can make a spooky film about that with a soundtrack by Marilyn Manson.
But the worst thing is that, yeah, that'd be sick. And it turned out mint. The worst thing is that I'm sitting here thinking that would be a horror show from the fourth or fifth day.
Yeah.
I think that's around the time that Phil would have recovered from. I think by six and seven, if you've been in there for a week, you're not recovering from being in a time loop for a week. Like, there's no coming back from it. You're institutionalized. It's down a real dark path. Real dark path. And that timeline is now haunted. Do you know what I mean?
I think the questions it would make you ask yourself on a fundamental level, because I think we all kind of go through life going, okay, well, there's big questions, but we don't have to interact with them because they're theoretical things that happen
100%.
Elsewhere. Whereas Phil is in a situation where he's like, no, I was in jail for 15 years working my way out of an institution because
100%.
Something out there decided that it needed to play with me. We are the playthings for immortal creatures.
100%.
And would just never... He would end up being the old guy in Punxsutawney.
Yes.
Dying exactly. of alcohol.
This is a whole other thing as well, because what if there's been a previous time loop where old guy has no fucking clue what's going on anymore, doesn't realize he's not in the time loop, and this is the whole thing. The whole movie becomes like a weird, fucked up existential crisis.
Yeah.
And you're just watching it going, I need to find a soul or some sort of fucking deity to believe in because I don't know where I'm going.
Speaking of deities,
we can do the, is it the religious movie now?
Well,
I want to come back to how long is he in the time loop for? Because how long is he in the time loop for is arguably more fun.
Well, okay. I've got my answer. Have you got yours?
For how long is he in the time loop? Yes. It's a while.
It's a long while.
It is a long while.
It's a long while.
I have reasons for this.
Picking up piano at a late age.
That's
a hard thing to do.
It is a hard thing to do. Some would say it would take thousands of hours.
Thousands of hours.
Thousands of hours to master. Then there's the whole narrating your day down to the second.
Right. And no matter where he is in town.
Doesn't matter where you are. You know exactly where you're going. He knows the ins and outs of everything that's going on. He knows the ins and outs of everybody's life.
Yep.
He's got to know every single person in there. When Rita starts challenging him in the diner, he can point out and tell everything and everyone. He knows everything that's about to happen to the second.
Mm-hmm.
That's
We're talking
a long time.
Many years.
I've got
decades,
three answers. I've got four answers for this.
Okay.
Three answers for this. I'm going to get into it a little bit now. So the original script with Ruben, he wrote that the time was tracked by Phil. Phil's character was keeping track of his time.
How?
This is where it gets real fucking genius. And it makes me think that Ruben might be a secret genius and or has been stuck in a time loop before.
Right. Okay.
In the original script in Phil's room, there was a bookshelf.
Right.
Full of books. Like top to bottom full of books.
Yeah.
It was the size of the wall. It was like floor to ceiling. Big old bookshelf full of books. And what Phil did is every morning He would wake up and he would read one page of one book to mark one day of time passing. He'd start at the top left of the bookshelf and he would finish at the bottom right of the bookshelf. So he'd work his way through like sequentially So he knew exactly how many days he'd been in there for. In the original script, there's a moment where Phil is talking to a guy called Gus. Gus asks him if he has a problem. Phil's like, yes, I have a problem. And in this version of the script, Phil says, I've been living in this town for 16 novels, 12 books of poetry, 9 history books, 20 romance novels, the Time Life series on Home Improvement, and Holly Lancaster's high school yearbook, and still nobody seems to know my name.
Ooh.
Which is fucking dark.
That's decades.
More than decades. I'm going to... I haven't written this down, but I've put a little note here saying, let's do the math, because I think this could be quite fun. So let's decide on...
Let me Google average length of a novel.
Yeah, average length of novel by page number.
Between 300 and 400 pages. So let's say 350.
Okay, so 350 pages, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to say that he lived through 16, 12, that's 28, 9 is 37.
Yeah.
20 is 57. Time Life series, we're going to say that's 5.
Yeah.
So that's 62. 63 with Holly Lancaster's high school yearbook. So 63 books, and we're going to say the average length is 350 pages.
63 years.
So that, yeah, it's 60.4 years just on that alone.
Yeah.
So he's been in there for 60 years just on that alone. So Ruben then goes on to express that like that's just his counting, because in the script, in his original script, we would see him start the first page and we would see him turn the last page.
So I was stuck at how terrible we were at maths. We're awful.
This is why I thought it'd be funny to do the math. That's why I've left the notes in.
I can feel the shaking of heads across the country.
Joke's on them. It gets me hard. You know what I mean? Keep being disappointed. Fuck, if you want to go one step further, pull what my dad did. Go get milk. But this is what I mean. So like we see him turn the first page, we see him turn the last page, mm-hmm. and this is a dark way of him saying that he's reading, he's doing something to pass the time. He knows exactly how long he's been in there and not a fucking thing is changing. He cannot make a lick of difference to his life no matter what he's doing, which is horrid.
Yeah.
Horrid.
I think the movie itself skips over what I would do. We're looking at the fact that he never wakes up with a hangover.
You never would.
He never wakes up with a come down.
You never would.
He never gains weight.
You never will.
So just live best.
He does life. He does those but in timelines.
In a montage. And I think for me, that would be where I ended. I'd just be like, look.
It wouldn't be ending though. Because you'd do it to such a point where you'd kill yourself.
Mm.
You would just wake up at 6 a.m. in Holly Lancaster's fucking B&B.
And do it all over again.
Yeah. So in the original script, we had like the book reading and all this stuff. Harold Ramis estimates that the time loop to be around 10 years. In his mind fortress, he thinks that it's about 10 years that have passed, which kind of aligns with Malcolm Gladwell's theory. It takes 10,000 hours to master anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You put 10,000 hours into the piano, maybe a bit of French, doing this. Maybe he's doing it for like between four to 6 hours per day. It would line up to be about 10 years to master the things that he masters in the movie that we see, which is a great way of looking at it. However, the studio at the time would have insisted that he was stuck in this loop for 2 weeks.
What?
Because anything more than that is too bleak.
No.
That's a true thing.
Having an extra 10 years of life in the prime of your 30s is too bleak.
No, in the worst day of your life, and you're being tortured for not being a person.
But it's not the worst day of his life.
It objectively is. There's times where I think he's one of these guys that if worse stuff would have happened to him, he would at least have something to moan about.
I suppose.
Which would bring him a certain level
of joy.
This
is a little bit mundane.
This is the most mundane day ever. You're going to go and report on a fucking groundhog.
Okay.
Whether he does
the most, I'll say it's the most mundane day of his life for sure. And if that's his version of worst,
for him personally, that's going to be the worst day of his life because nothing exciting happens, either good or bad.
I find it interesting that you assume it's the universe that's doing this to him, because I've got other theories.
Yeah.
I've got other people I think it might be.
Okay.
Well, look at it this way.
Yeah.
Any detective.
Yes.
Who benefits? Who benefits from Phil?
I've got an answer to this. I think it's going to be different from yours, but I want yours first.
Right, okay. So.
Because I think if you're going to pull the thread that I think you're going to pull, I'm nursing a chubby as it is.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
So I look at who benefits. There's two people. These are my two prime suspects.
Okay.
The first one.
Yeah.
Rita.
Ooh, okay. Who's your second one?
Ned Ryerson.
There are three suspects. I'm going to chuck my third suspect in.
I thought
in.
There was a third one.
I'm going to chuck my
third
one in.
But there's a line of dialogue that discounted that third suspect.
Who was your third suspect?
The Punxsutawney groundhog.
I'm going to put that back in there.
Okay.
I'm putting that groundhog
back in. Okay, put that back in because I've got a wrinkle that stopped
me. Hit me with
a
wrinkle.
Right.
I've never minded a wrinkle. That's why I like older people.
I'll hit you with a wrinkle. But first, Rita. There's a documentary that I think is really relevant here.
Sure.
Called Bewitched, about how witches live among us and seek mortal husbands.
Yeah, great.
So Rita, let's assume she's a witch.
Okay.
She meets the big time TV weatherman.
Big time.
Big time. Massive.
The local Channel 9 weatherman.
For whom she is a producer.
She is.
So she's lower on the rung.
Are you saying that she wants to be a reproducer?
She wants to be a reproducer.
Whoa!
Right?
Fucking nailed
Someone
it.
Turned up.
Fucking nailed it.
So she sees an opportunity to do the old classic move, the old reverse Weinstein, right? And she reverse Weinstein's... She reverse Weinstein's Phil, but she needs security. She needs...
Reverse Weinstein's not an okay turn of phrase.
Yes, it is. She needs him to love her. So how to go about it? She's clearly going to get bored and move on. Unless she crafts a spell in which she's the only valid partner going forward. He can try being with anyone else.
I mean, he does.
Still stuck in the loop. He does.
He gets laid constantly.
All
the time. He still wants to go for Rita.
Still wants to go for Rita.
But that's true love. That's true love he's chasing.
Is it? Or is he being reverse Weinstein'd?
Maybe.
Maybe that's the only one that works.
You're saying that the only thing that works on Phil is a reverse Weinstein?
Yeah.
Because he can Weinstein anyone in the time loop.
Yep.
But the reverse Weinstein, the old...
Is the only thing that gets him out.
The Uno reverse.
Because he's in her trap. To the point where he gets so broken down that he's such everyone else's doormat that he puts himself up for sale. And who buys his everlasting soul? Rita.
Rita.
To the point that in the morning, she wakes up and she says, I own you. I bought you. And then they have their life together.
Do you know what's mad about that?
Right.
He doesn't put himself up for sale. It's, what's her fucking name? The waitress from the diner.
Oh, yeah.
She's the one that drags him forward.
Mm.
Maybe she's in on the coven.
It's a coven. We've got a craft situation.
I love this.
Right?
I love this. You're saying that within the film of Groundhog Day, there's a craft movie.
There's a craft. There's a coven of witches that are reverse Weinsteining Phil.
I love this.
Where you will never move forward with your life without me.
I want to.
It's with me or nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
I want that movie. I want to watch that movie.
But I was on that thread. And I thought it's a bit misogynist. Maybe can't do that.
It's massively misogynist. So, you reverse Weinsteining, that being a turn of phrase, is probably...
Hashtag what about me.
Hashtag, but yeah, what about me?
Hashtag me next.
Oh my days. Hashtag you next. From Rita's perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Fuck
there we
hell.
Go. Now.
Oh, okay.
This was all pales in comparison to the real... villain.
The second most likely.
No, the most likely.
The second most likely, but we'll continue.
Ned Ryerson is an eldritch god. He's like Cthulhu or Satan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a fucking insurance salesman for a start.
Right.
There you go.
Phil's never met Ned. Ned provides all of the backstory.
He does.
For Ned.
Yeah.
Phil does not remember him at all.
Phil does the exact same trick. Nancy.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you think he learned it from?
Eldritch God.
Eldritch God.
Yeah.
He hides as a bumbling salesman. And look at what he offers.
Yeah.
Single premium life.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever Phil considers the best life.
Yeah.
The premium life is on offer here. And when he gets to the shoot.
Yeah.
He says, oh, sorry, a giant leech got me. Now, what are Ned's nicknames? Ned the Bull.
Yeah.
Implying he's got horns.
Okay.
He says, right, 7 times. Right, 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 right.
Ooh,
right.
Okay, yeah.
The puddle. Ooh, that first step is a doozy. That first step into your life of sin.
Got you.
And then at the end of the movie,
yeah.
Why does he get out of the loop?
He buys the insurance.
He sells his soul to Ned Ryerson.
He bought the insurance. He bought
he
all of his insurance.
He sells his life.
Mm, that's a good one.
And as a reward,
yeah,
he gets his premium single life with Rita.
Okay.
That he gets to live the rest out of.
That's really good.
It's Ned Ryerson, the Eldritch God, keeping him on hold.
Yeah.
Going, buy it, fam. Buy it, buy it.
Yeah.
And then Rita comes up. He's like, did I ask you? Buy it, buy this house.
Cheer up, London.
Now, you're going to say the groundhog.
Yeah.
You think it's the groundhog that's doing this?
I think the groundhog is a trickster god.
Right.
I think the groundhog is an all-seeing, all-knowing entity that has tricked an entire town of people to doing a really cute festival to celebrate him. on February 2nd.
That's quite cute.
He's
like, I want a party.
Well, no, Christianity has a...
Is it Candlemas?
Candlemas on February 2nd.
Yeah.
Which Grandog Day is like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think the Americans brought it over wrong. It used to be a badger. And then they didn't have badgers where they were, so that it became a groundhog.
Maybe.
I think it's that. I read that like last week. That could be
also,
very wrong.
Also, his name was Pete until 1958. And now it's Phil. For some reason.
he had some allegations he needed to dodge.
That's it, yeah. I mean, it did go back to 1870 some shit. So, you know, there's a few that could have...
Salem witch trials.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, to dodge him.
So my only issue is I was hot on the trail of Phil the Groundhog.
Yeah.
But then when Phil the Weatherman has kidnapped Phil the Groundhog and they're driving at the police officer, police officer says, aim high, don't hit the groundhog, implying the groundhog is mortal.
In their eyes, because a trickster god would never reveal his true self. That's a fucking stupid... Hey, you're right, buddy. I'm a trickster god. Also, this is for a lull. Do you want to drag me out of a stump every year? Come on. You're better than this. You're better than this. He's a trickster god. He has a news crew in front of him reporting to the local bits every day. He's tricked an entire town of people to being sort of like, I'll worship this little groundhog every now and then. He knows what's going to happen. It's not a fucking guessing game. What if he sees a shadow? It's going to be 6 more weeks of winter. Dickhead. It's my choice.
Okay.
I'll fucking decide whether it's going to be 6 weeks or not. You just show up and worship me like the peasant fox you are. This is Phil talking, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Morphine
Ben really, really but what I'm saying inhabited
is,
that character.
He's a trickster god, right? And where did the news crew set up to report this thing? Right next to the tree stump where Phil's living in it. And how does Phil, the weatherman, report? Does he call him a big squirrel? Does he stand there and take the piss out of this fucking little festival that this trickster god's built his time up and been sort of like, this is my day, motherfucker.
That's true. He angers the trickster
god. You've just taken the piss out of me.
He
within earshot to my fucking face and call me a squirrel, a fucking squirrel. I, sir, I'm a groundhog. I'm a marmot. I'm not a fucking squirrel. And he's like, you know what, mate? You can live in this day until you find a way to correct your shitty life, correct your shitty being, or I'm going to make sure that you're here every day and until you get it right. Because what happens on the last day that's canonical events? What speech does he give about the festival?
A really heartfelt one.
He goes fucking to town.
He compliments the shit out of the groundhog.
He compliments the shit the groundhog. He makes huge of the town. He gives this real heartfelt, true, honest to bollocks, amazing speech that honors everyone and everything that this festival stands for. And that's the day that he gets to exit the fucking loop, because the groundhog is like, you've learned your lesson. You've learned your lesson. I'm going to let you carry on.
Okay.
I think there's two suspects there, because the Rita one, I'm desperate to happen.
Right, okay.
Because like, that's a film within a film.
Ned's
the devil. That's a good one as well.
That's also fine.
That is really fine.
And then also the groundhog.
Groundhog one's fine. I think that the most beautiful thing about this film and what this film does more than anything is it doesn't focus on the how or the why he's stuck in a time loop.
No.
It doesn't care about it. It trusts its audience enough to draw our own conclusions. We know what's happening immediately.
Yeah.
Don't need it spoon-fed.
No.
It focuses on the what is possible with the position that I find myself in right now.
Okay.
And it goes through all the options from being an absolute fucking menace to doing weird shit to get laid to doing I can never wake up with a hangover to finding a person that you genuinely care about enough to go, I actually need to make an effort here.
Yeah.
And he does things all the wrong ways. And that's early Phil, which again, you're not supposed to sympathize with.
Yeah, no.
Because it's early Phil.
Yeah, yeah.
And you watch Phil evolve from narcissistic piece of shit, goes through the motions of having these different sort of like, I'd say categories of experiences from like very, very shallow to sort of earth-breaking to life-altering to genuine, true, honest encounters with people. We focus on all this stuff, right? We don't see how the sausage is made. We don't need to see how the sausage is made.
No, we just
sit there and we eat a delicious sausage and we shut the fuck up, because that's what we need to do, right? It's just enjoy every mouthful. It's the emotional journey that matters.
Yeah,
100%. And for the writers and the directors to trust wholeheartedly that the audience will pick up on everything that's being displayed here, whether it's a cheap shit rom-com that you're after, whether it's a deep philosophical, hold the mirror up and real, take a deep look at yourself as to what's going on in your life right now kind of experience. Every aspect is covered. I can't think of a modern film that has gone to town on the script as much as this has, in a way where it covers that much of the spectrum.
Madame Web?
Madame Web's up there. That is up there. Yeah, I feel egg on my face. I feel like a right dick. Madame Web, yeah, that might be it. That might be the other one.
Because for as much as Groundhog Day makes a really good point yeah. about you can't change the world, but you can change how you react to it.
Yes.
And in the process of doing that and in the process of changing yourself,
mm-hmm.
it's exactly the same as changing the world.
100%.
And is in fact better for you and the world around you.
Exactly.
That's a fantastic message. But Madam Web
yeah.
is what if there were four spider women
mm-hmm.
and one of them was Sydney Sweeney?
I said just end of sentence there. Just what if there were four spider women?
What if there were four spider women?
Yeah.
Now, in terms of things I need answers to.
Did you say one of them was Sydney Sweeney?
Yeah.
Is that...
Yeah.
I've not seen Madam Web. Oh, well, that's all. So yeah, so it truly doesn't matter how long he's been in the time loop. Not at all. It only matters what he did whilst he was there. And whilst he was there, it was one day. When the main fucking lesson on that one is, what can you do today?
Mm-hmm.
Not tomorrow, not yesterday. What can you do today that matters? And that is one of the most beautiful fucking takeaways.
Gorgeous.
From a gorgeous little time loop movie that was made yeah. in 93 that we could ever think of. It's ridiculous. How long do you think you'd be in a loop before you tried to kill yourself?
Oh, as soon as I knew it was a loop, I would... It would be a while. It'd be a long while, yeah.
Okay.
I think I'd die by misadventure before I killed myself knowingly.
Oh, mine would be the other way around.
Really?
Yeah, mine. I'd give myself a week before I tried to kill myself.
Really?
I think it'd be about a week maximum.
Oh, no, dude. No consequences, no rules. I'd love that shit.
Yeah, but I'd be terrified. I'd be shit scared at first. Are you being serious? The same day over and over again. I'd be shit scared at first. If it was today and my knees aching the way they are, I'd kill myself immediately.
Heroin
exists. I'd kill myself tomorrow.
But you're in Telford.
Yeah, I know heroin exists because fucking Oromorph. Yeah. I've been sipping it like it's a fucking fine wine for the last week. You're taking the piss.
But you could suddenly, you'd have your entire week's worth of Oromorph.
Yeah.
You could take it today and know.
I can do that today.
Yeah, but tomorrow,
yeah.
you won't have any. Whereas if you were in a time loop, you could take it all today.
Yeah.
And then just wake up and it'd all be back again.
But I'd be dead. That's a suicide. It is, because I'd be killing the morphine isn't attacking me. It's not forcing itself. It's not reverse Weinsteining me. I would be doing it to myself. I'd be Weinsteining myself.
The rare self-Weinstein.
I wouldn't say rare at this point, mate. It's been a while. Morphine Ben ordered a feature-length porn off eBay the other day. What are we talking about? Is it a religious movie?
I think we've acknowledged that it is.
It is. It can be. It can be.
Right.
So it can be religious. It struck a chord with every religion. Christian fundamentalists were writing to Ramis saying, you know, like, thank you for our representation. Hasidic Jews
right.
were walking outside movie theaters with placards.
Right.
And then naturally, when Ramis found out about this, he was nervous that, like, oh, fuck.
Were they protesting?
They've got an issue with my movie.
Right.
And he found out that they're holding placards saying things like, do you feel stuck? Or are you living the same day after day after day after day after day? And they were encouraging people to go and watch this movie because of its Jewish undertones. And it was like not a recruitment video, but it was like, this aligns with our
if
beliefs.
If you feel a bit of a way coming out of this, then
this
maybe
supports
come
our beliefs.
Us, yeah.
Like this kind of covers our beliefs in one movie. Go and watch Groundhog Day. It's fucking amazing.
Sick.
So you had Christians pushing everyone to go watch it. You had Jewish people pushing everyone to go watch it. You've got...
Bet the Amish are fuming.
Could you imagine? Where's the wooden cut? Where's the pictorial?
Release the wooden cut.
Release the wood cut. So this whole thing was going on. All these guys were sort of like reaching out saying, you know, thank you for our representation. Then you got the Buddhists. The Buddhist ideologies that are running through the films can be taken away, obviously, like involving karma and how kindness affects your day to day and how like you live each day a little bit kinder than the last day. And eventually will lead you to nirvana, which is exactly what happens to Phil in this film. It can be applied to a majority of religious beliefs.
I think because it's got such a humanist message of look at your actions, how they affect the world, and maybe think about changing those before telling other people to change their ways. One of those universally good messages that is contained in most fiction, including that of religion.
I mean, Ramis had like a weird thing to say about this. He was like, it's always seemed ironic to me that it didn't lead to all of these people recognizing the commonality of all of their points of view, but rather this must be about us and only us.
Right.
I'm profoundly like, this is insane to me.
It's profoundly act one Phil behavior.
100%. Which is wild, right?
You're talking about me, of course.
Yeah, of course. The whole universe has stopped doing normal timelines and is only focusing on one white man until he's ready. That's an insane thing to think about. I hate that view. I hate it. But it wasn't just the religious people that Grandad Day struck a chord with. There's also the psychoanalysts.
Right.
So in 2006, so once in the loop, Phil Connors' character, his evolution, in the original screenplay at least, is based on the five stages of grief. You've got denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And that's mm-hmm. how the film plays out, roughly, now. But in the original, it played out to a T, those five. And in 2006, the International Journal of Psychoanalysis published a scholarly paper titled Groundhog Day, Cinematic Depiction of the Mutative Process.
Right.
Yeah, and there's this whole peer-review academic paper what on Groundhog Day. And it states, the film shows us a man trapped by his narcissistic defenses. The device of repetition becomes a representation of developmental arrest and closure from object relatedness. Repetition also becomes a means of escape from his characterological dilemma, the opportunity to redo and learn from experiences, in particular, to love and learn through experience with a good object, symbolizes the reparative possibilities in every life.
Holy shit.
This whole fucking academic paper goes on to discuss Groundhog Day as and that's in 2006, so it's almost like it's over a decade later, so it's still having its effect, like years on.
It's one of those comedy classics that I think it's hard to hate.
It is.
It's you watch. I think you'd have to have a level of cynicism because the character himself is so cynical.
Yes,
it scoops the cynics up.
Yeah, it
because
does.
you see him. It's a little bit like I might bring it next week. Actually, As Good as It Gets with Jack Nicholson.
Ooh, I do actually love that movie.
Great film.
Yes, great film.
Great film because it starts with, it's the exact same film as Groundhog Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost identically beat for beat. Massive cynic.
Yeah.
Learns to stop being so cynical.
Yeah, 100%.
Through challenge.
Yeah.
And someone just being like, no.
Yeah.
No, you can't do this anymore.
But why though?
Right.
Why are you doing this?
Right, exactly.
What's this for?
Right, exactly.
Who's this for?
Right. And so I think films like that, they scoop me up because I'm never as cynical as the main character starts. And I kind of enjoy their cynicism and I'm like, oh, that's a zinger. And then it brings me along their journey with them and I go, ah.
That's where I could be. And then you turn it off and immediately go, I fucking hate the weather. Bollocks. Life's shit.
Yeah. 100%.
I love 100%. This though, because it's like the character evolutions, the character evolution of every character involved is just glorious from start to finish. And like you've just said, it scoops up the cynics, but I think having a character that does so much in so little time and can traverse the ins and outs of obviously everything that's just been fucking going on to such a degree, and to have Bill Murray be the guy that pulls that off.
I do wonder if it's a slight fuck you to Bill Murray that they thought, do you know who'd be perfect to play this prick?
Mm.
Bill Murray.
He was third pick.
Oh, was he? Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Tom Hanks was supposed to do this.
I could see that working. If you think A League of Their Own.
Yeah.
If you think there are other...
The journey's much shorter in League of Their Own. The journey's much quicker in League of Their Own. It's almost like a day where he goes, I might not just drink whiskey and beat children today. And everyone's like, oh, what a hero.
Well, Gina Davis just goes, try a Coke. Have a Coca-Cola. And he goes, oh, this is actually pretty good. And then he's just not alcoholic anymore.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? It's mad. It's almost like it's an advert. You know what I mean? It's mad. So I can't remember who was the second person.
Okay, because I would
down
hate...
Somewhere.
I always worry, you know, Seven, directed by David Fincher, starring Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt. And there's a scene in there where they walk in to a person who's been force-fed to death.
Yes.
And this poor extra has to sit face down.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton would have nailed this.
Yeah.
He would have absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
But I always worry when there's a character cast to play, for instance, in Seven, you're going to lay face down in this cereal, and then Brad Pitt is going to walk laps going, look at this disgusting beast.
This horrible fat bastard.
Piece of shit.
Look at this fucking absolute detriment to society. Right. I'm frankly glad this has happened. Right.
And they're just lying there, just being like, oh.
I told my mum I was in Seven.
Right.
I told my mum I was in a Fincher film.
Right, this is my actual body.
And it's Brad Pitt who's literally just, we had to do this take 19 times?
And so I do wonder with scripts like Groundhog Day, they're like, look, we've got Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
The guy's a narcissistic, egotistical dickhead.
Yeah.
And we just thought of you.
Yeah. Thought you'd be perfect for this. Yeah.
Surely that's a sign you need to go, I've gone a bit Chevy Chase here.
Chevy Chase still wasn't full Chevy Chase at this point, because Chevy Chase was doing stuff like Caddyshack, where he was actually playing like a semi-mysterious, weird leading man.
Right, yeah, yeah.
No one really knows where his income's coming from, and he keeps dropping these little philosophical nuggets all the way through Caddyshack, which is weird, but it all makes sense in the end, and I fucking love it.
I never got into Chevy Chase, so when it was reported that he was amazing. An asshole, I was like, I don't really care.
Early Chevy Chase is amazing.
Right.
He is amazing. Like,
is it true Bill Murray punched him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, was he married to Chevy Chase? Is that why he punched him?
No.
Because I know he punches anything he's married to repeatedly.
Yeah, there's a thing there. I mean, unfortunately, Groundhog Day was happening when he was going through a rough divorce.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Yeah.
So he'd always come in the morning with tired knuckles. Must have been really hard for him. You know what I mean?
Must be really difficult for
a wife beater to come into work every day.
For the wife to watch the film.
To know that it's this big and has this lasting effect.
And to see him playing everything you know he isn't. Mm. Just going, you piece of shit.
Weird that.
You just made millions by being nice. Yeah. And all I asked you was to stop hitting me.
Yeah. Mad.
Mad.
Oh, you can fall in love with her.
Yeah, right.
Right. Okay, yeah, sure. Okay.
Every day is exactly the same, is it, Bill?
Yeah, is it? Yeah,
wonder where you got that fucking concept from.
This is terrible. This has gone fully off the rails. Should we get to what it means?
Shall we?
Yeah, that'd be good. What did this... have you got anything for what this really meant to you? What did this...
I touched on it earlier. I think I really loved the theme that you can't change the world. He literally cannot change anything.
No. Nope.
He can't do anything tomorrow. He can't do anything about the decisions he's already made yesterday. He's only got that one day.
Yeah.
And all he can change is how he reacts to things.
Yeah.
And through changing that, you get an idealized version because suddenly he's got the best day in the world. But I think there is some truth to that mechanism of like, check your own shoes, motherfucker. If you 100%. Stink, smell shit everywhere.
If you stink, smell shit.
If you stink, everywhere. Smell shit everywhere.
Yeah.
Probably your shoes.
Probably check shoe.
Check shoe.
Check shit, smell, stink everywhere.
Yes.
Shoe check.
Rob McFarlane, 2025.
Age 36.
Yeah, that's a t-shirt.
Possible stroke.
Called the Bondulance.
Called the fucking Bondulance. Look, I think we've summed this up well. It's a cynical guy caught in a cynical cycle. Day to day he's grown tired of. He believes he deserves better things, but nothing ever comes of it. But he's not doing anything to get to those better things. He feels like he's sort of entitled to this shit. A bigger network is coming for me. Don't you worry about it. Hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? It's this self-entitlement that I feel like society is rife with right now. The main character syndrome that I feel is fucking epidemic right now.
Oh, 100%.
It's insane. Yeah. Like, the amount of times that you go to walk into a restaurant and some cunt is filming a TikTok, you're like, do you mind you're in frame? It's like, do you mind you're in a fucking public restaurant? How about that one, dickhead? What the fuck are you talking about? Oh, I'm sorry, you paid for a soup, so therefore you think, what, you fucking own this half of the restaurant? I hate these people. Rob, I hate them.
Right.
Whenever you suggest, oh, we could just do this outside, I'm like, no, we can't, because we're in the public, and that's fucking egregious.
We're inside public, egregious. Ben Groves, exactly. 36. Exactly. 2025.
36 possible strokes.
Call the Bondulance.
But this cynical guy is forced to learn to love himself, his life, and it's those around him in a sincere way, not just in a for show way. It's not just in a sort of shallow puddle depth thing. He has to really fucking do it. He gets out of the loop by learning to be a more fulfilled person and realizing that his kindness or his negativity impacts those around him, and the level of impact that can have on not just his life, on everyone's life. Because everyone's struggling. Everyone's going through shit. And it's none of his business to what that shit is. The only thing that he can do is try and ease the fucking pedal of that shit grinding that person into the dirt every day by just being a little bit nicer. It's one of these things that sort of shows the benefits of kindness being a mutually beneficial act.
Yeah.
And I think if there's one thing that the film tells us and like leaves us with, is if you can do one thing today, it's be kind.
That's really true.
That is the most gorgeous thing that you can take away from a 1993 romantic comedy starring Bill Murray, notorious wife beater. I didn't mean to laugh. I'm not laughing at the wife beating thing. It's just a circumstance.
It's the irony.
It's the happenstance. You know what I mean?
It's God works in mysterious ways.
Isn't it?
Just before we wrap up and we give everyone our final definitive, some might say controversial, all-time rating of this movie.
Mm.
Shall we see what the gorgeous people of the internet have been saying about us on our social media reels?
I'm not going to lie, I've been away from socials and Discord for a little while because I've obviously like...
You've had a lung out.
My lung
Yes.
chopped off.
Selfish prick.
Oh, you know,
I've had a lung out. Oh, all right, get over
it.
Just a lung.
Focus on this thing. You know?
Well, you'd be glad to know I put up a little reel. I was curious. Tron Ares, I'm going to go see it in a couple of hours. I've not seen it yet, but I know it's going to lose money hand over fist.
And
it got me thinking, how much money has Jared Leto lost the movie industry? And I thought I'd do a running total.
Okay.
And just add up a couple of his flops.
This is a great idea. I'm kind of pissed off on that part of it.
It's 800 million.
That seems light. That seems like
it just 0.8 billion dollars.
Yeah, but I expected it to be in like the 1 point or the 2 point.
Okay.
I expected it to be more.
But to be fair, I didn't do all of his films. I just did the famous flops with marketing and exhibitor fees.
Got you.
And this lady got in touch. I won't name her. Another sour, jealous man.
Fair.
Are you going to be okay, Bubba?
Aw.
Why don't you just stay home and take some fucking ketamine so you can get over it?
This is incredible. I want to see this woman. Let me have a look at this. Have you got her there?
I've got her, yeah.
Oh, let's have a
just
aw.
That's a screenshot, so you'll have to type it in to Instagram.
Fine. That's great. She looks like if ketamine was struck by lightning and came to life. So maybe you should stay home and do ketamine, because clearly she needs it.
Right. Also, I was watching one of those bloody documentaries about this woman who's like 22.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a nappy for the rest of her life.
By choice or?
No.
Just one.
She was addicted to ketamine
okay.
for 2 years.
Yeah.
She didn't even go out. She just stayed in her bedroom
yeah.
and did ketamine for 2 years.
Okay, that's objectively terrible.
It's a terrible, terrible way to do ketamine.
There is some great comedy. There's some. Do you know what I mean? There's an opportunity for a few there.
I feel like
it's into
a good
something more comfortable. You just hit a Velcro rip. Throws the dress out the door. Throws the bra out. You just hear Velcro rip,
and then a wet thunk.
Objectively funny. Objectively
right.
funny.
Right. Right. So she melted her bladder. So
that's not
that's
funny.
What ketamine does.
Should have waited before we got into this, but that's fine.
It dissolves your bladder lining.
Amazing.
So she needs a toilet like every half hour.
Well, maybe you should stay at home and do loads of ketamine instead of commenting on film choice,
right.
apparently.
Also, with all of these, I'm like, you're aware you can scroll, right?
Yeah, just
I disagree with this. Move on. Do you know how much stuff I see online I disagree with? And I just go,
I can imagine.
On.
I can literally imagine. I know you probably on the same level that you know yourself. Probably a little bit more sometimes. But on the level that you know me, I feel like I know you.
Yeah.
So I could picture you scrolling and just getting fucking fuming within the first 10 minutes. And then having to go and listen to like dark fucking house music that's made with a guitar and a drum machine for 4 hours.
Big up Giant Swan. Great band. If you've not heard them, listen to Giant Swan. They're incredible.
I've heard them for the entire drive here.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Not a beat wasted.
Nah.
Good. Not your vibe. It's not fun.
No, it was good. It was good.
That's Comic Corner Gang, and we would hope it's obvious how you can get involved. Maybe hear us dive into your thoughts about the movies we're covering. Just find us on social media.
Find us on socials. Drop us an email. Give us your thoughts on Groundhog Day. Let us know, because we'll get it into next week's episode. It'll be fucking great. Now listen, thanks each and every one of you for listening to us, for hanging out with us for a little bit. This has been fucking amazing.
It has been lovely.
We've chatted shit. We've dropped some info bombs. We're hoping that you go away feeling that you know a little bit more about Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
That you know a little bit more about Harvey Weinstein. And you know a little bit more about how to not Weinstein. Some would say,
who would win, Rosa Weinstein. Parks or a bus? It's
there
up for debate.
Go. Let us know in the comments. This is a fucking terrible sign off. Thank you so much. We love you all. Each and every one of you from the bottom of our hearts.
We really do. We're going to go chat a little bit more over on Patreon.
Yeah.
For Patreon. It's only £1 a month, by the way. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I could do with more of this.
I could do with more of this.
It's £1.
Give me £1. Sorry, let me rephrase. Can I have a quid, please?
Right, please.
Can I have a quid, please?
Please, just a quid.
It's just a quid, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Just a quid.
Just, give us a quid. Go on, give us a quid.
I need sweeties.
I need train fare because my wife's giving birth to a tumour. I don't know. I don't know what excuses people use these days.
The morphine's really kicked in, huh?
Morphine Ben is here to stay.
Right, should we go chat with him afterwards?
Sure.
Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes and feelings of Groundhog Day into a Monday motivational pep talk.
No, Ben would have. Ben would have done a mint job of it. Morphine Ben's going to shit on it and ruin the entire hour that we've just spent doing this.
Well, I'm just going to tell everyone to consume.
Listen, he spends about 2 weeks running around fucking fingering strangers, which is all fun and games, right? It's all fun and games. But my question is if he caught something, like let's say he gets the clap on day 17, does he wake up with the clap or is he free and clean now? Because if he's free and clean now, I'd say drop your standards.
Right.
You know what I mean? Time loop. Oh, I'm in a time loop. Zero standards. Oh, I'm sorry, what's that? The sketty old librarian that now lives out the back of a KFC. That's getting tongue punched.